Hello and welcome to When They Popped. I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Mary.
You guys, it's April 1st. We've officially made it to the month of Backstreet Boys' 30th anniversary trip to Cancun. And we are full on panic ordering resort wear over here. So if you're going, please DM us and tell us what you're packing because we are freaking out.
You can never have too many swimsuits or jean shorts for this event, it feels like.
Like, what are we wearing? What's the vibe? What's going on? There's theme night. There's a pajama night. There's an all white night. What are we wearing, girls? Anyway, speaking of April, this month, 24 years ago in 2000, the artist we're going to talk about made her debut. Today, we are going to talk about the woman, the myth, the legend, the only person who could make a color their name and still get top SEO billing, Pink. We're going to talk about when Pink popped. That's a tongue twister. But specifically, we're going to spend our time discussing her second album, Misunderstood. And this album is really special to us. So we just wanted to talk through the top hits and some of our favorite songs. When this album came out, it was peak going to Claire's to buy those fake colored hair clip-ins. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like the scrunchies that had fake hair with blue or pink streaks in them. So you would put your hair in like a messy bun and it would look like you had that 2000 style, like spiky messy bun with like the streaks of colors in them.
All you needed was like the Olsen twins, like chopsticks in the bun.
Yes. Oh my God, the chopsticks.
Yeah.
Make chopsticks on your hair. And they had like all of those different hairsprays that were colored. So you could give yourself like a very temporary like hair dye job and you could get pink or red or blue.
I know. I could do all the scrunchies I want, but I was not allowed to do the sprays.
I was allowed to do the sprays because they came out immediately. And my mom would like let me do it if like my dad wasn't home or something. It was a don't tell your father type scenario.
Yes.
In diving into this episode, I learned that I knew nothing about Pink's background. So this was a really fun exercise. And you know what else is fun, Mary? Our disclaimer that we do not own or claim to own the rights to the songs or performances in this episode. And the purpose of these clips is for commentary and critique. So let's talk about Pink and a little bit of her background. So her real name is Alicia Beth Moore. I knew her name was Alicia because on the cover of the Misunderstood album, you see her name like written backwards. That was like the first Easter egg in an album that I remember finding and being like, oh my God, she's so smart for doing.
I didn't even notice that.
She looks like she's laying on like a bus bench or something. And it's on the top right corner. I know. Like it's like burned in my memory. So she attended high school in Pennsylvania, where she joined her first band, which was called Middle Ground, but they broke up after losing Battle of the Bands. I hear a lot about celebrities having Battle of the Bands competitions. My school never did shit like that. Did yours, Mary? I feel like it's like made up for a Boy Meets World episode.
No, I don't. We never had that either. But I had some classmates that formed bands, but they never battled.
They never battled. Well, maybe that was for the best because then they would have disbanded like Middle Ground, Pink's band. So as a teenager, she would write her own lyrics, forever an artist, and she used writing songs as an outlet for her feelings. And her mom allegedly made a comment that they were very introspective, sometimes very black and very deep, almost worrisome. LOL, that would be all of our moms if they could read our middle school journals. So then Pink began performing in Philadelphia clubs when she was only 14 years old. Whew! And that's when she started to adopt her nickname Pink as her stage name. She's given a couple different explanations about how she came up with the stage name Pink, but it seems like it was always a nickname for her that she had since she was a child. And at 14, she joined a band called Basic Instinct. But again, they broke up before they ever released music.
Okay, I have some tea from this Pink era. She shared a vocal coach with an anonymous source. The source was a few years younger than Pink, but his name was Sal Dupree. And he worked with Pink in her 14, 15, 16-year-old years. And Sal was obviously very complimentary as to Pink's vocal prowess. I mean, how could you not be? But he definitely could tell she was having a hard time at home during these years. And as he put it, seemed to be going through a phase and was very sassy when it came to vocal lessons. And that does not surprise me. That seems like our girl Pink. She's got a lot of attitude.
We're going to talk about the phases for sure.
Yes.
We'll get there. So when she was just 16, she joined another R&B girl group. So now we're on group number three, called Choice. And Choice signed with LaFace Records in 1995. Now, for anyone who doesn't know, LaFace Records, as the name may suggest, was a joint venture between producing duo L.A. Reid and Babyface. L.A., Babyface, LaFace. This was a huge label in the 90s. They launched the careers of TLC, Toni Braxton, Outkast, Usher, Ciara, T.I. Like, holy shit, this is a huge big break for her, right? Wrong. The group broke up once again without any major releases. So heartbreaking. But I did find a clip of a supposed unreleased track on YouTube. So listen to this. So I say that they didn't have any major releases, but their song Key to My Heart appeared on the soundtrack of the 1996 film Kazam. Remember Kazam, when the kid finds like a genie and he gets all these wishes and he wishes for candy to fall from the sky? That was like my whole dream. I think it's Shaquille O'Neal.
Oh, okay. That does sound really familiar.
Oh my God. We need to watch that movie when we're in Cancun. It's such a good one. It's very Deal. Like Aladdin, but modern day.
Ooh. Love that.
Okay, so Choice breaks up. Maybe it was their choice. Maybe it wasn't. Who knows? But it wasn't all bad because Pink went solo. I read some story that maybe LA like was talking to her at a holiday party and he was like, you need to go solo. Like, being in a group is not for you. He must have been right because she soon signed a recording contract with LaFace Records as a solo artist. And she began working on her first solo album with producers Babyface, obviously, Candy Burris, and Tricky Stewart. And in 2000, Pink released her first solo album called Can't Take Me Home. And she earned two top 10 singles. There You Go. There you go. And Most Girls. The album peaked at 26 on the charts. Not bad, but it went double platinum. She shared co-writing credits on 7 of the album's tracks, which is huge for a new artist. But it did get mixed reviews from critics. Some said her sound on the album was too similar to other artists out there, predominantly TLC and Destiny's Child, which I fear I actually agree with. The intro to Most Girls sounds almost identical to No Scrubs. Here's Most Girls. Here's No Scrubs. And it also has similarities to the intro to Bills, Bills, Bills. And then the next song, There You Go, the intro sounds very similar to Most Girls. What do you think, Mary?
Okay, when you lay it out like that, I definitely hear it. And it's annoying because it's not like that was what she wanted. They were obviously forcing this like recycled sound on her. Looking back, it's kind of an odd sound for her. It sounds so R&B, like especially on There You Go. I was re-listening to that and I was like, I would have never pegged this as a Pink song in a million trillion years. But I really liked Most Girls. What about that? Some like fun production there. And, you know, Pink early on taught us what to expect from our partners, from ourselves. She set the tone. Shorty got a job, Shorty got a car, and Shorty can pay her own rent. Pink raised us.
It's interesting because I feel like I knew these two songs from her first yes. album, but I almost consider Misunderstood like her first album in a way, because it's the first one that has the sound yeah. that she has now, I guess. I always thought Misunderstood was her first album, so that just shows how much I know. Even though these songs sounded so similar to one another, according to us and the critics, she won Female New Artist of the Year at the 2000 Billboard Music Awards, and then she started opening up for NSYNC's No Strings Attached tour. Can you?
Huge.
What could be better? Also, did any of our listeners out there see Pink open for NSYNC? Because we really want to know. I bet Devin Daniels did. Devin, girl, if you're listening to this, we know you got backstage somehow. So, I mean, that's huge, right? A platinum album, a Billboard Music Award. But I would argue that she hadn't even popped yet. That would come in 2001 when she collabed with Christina Aguilera, Maya, and Lil' Kim on their cover of Lady Marmalade for the Moulin Rouge soundtrack. Mocha Chocolata, yeah, yeah. Real Lady Marmalade. In the US, this became the most successful airplay-only single in history. I don't really know what that means. I think it just means that it was released over the digital waves instead of like a physical CD, but color me impressed.
Yes.
And this was Pink's first number one single. She won the MTV Video Music Award for Video of the Year, and it won Pink her first Grammy for Best Pop Collab with Vocals.
Incredible. We need to pivot for a second, though, to discuss kind of the infamous Pink and Christina Aguilera beef that was going on behind the scenes of Lady Marmalade. Their bad blood boiled over during the music video shoot. And the choreographer, Tina Landon, gave an interview about that time. And she remembered that all the women were there watching everybody film their parts. And Paul Hunter, who was the director of the music video, was trying to give Christina direction, you know, like lean a little bit this way, do a little bit of that, whatever. And Christina couldn't hear him. And Pink jumped in and reiterated what the director had said. And Christina apparently did the whole thing like, I was talking to Paul. Oh, God. And Tina, the choreographer, was just like recoiling in her chair. She was just like, oh, no, I know this is not going to go well. According to Pink, she believes that the tensions kind of started prior to that moment. She recalled at one of the formative meetings when they were all meeting to discuss the concept of the song and who would be involved, that Christina's label executive, Rob Fair, walked in and didn't acknowledge anybody else in the room, any of the women in the room. And he just said, quote, what's the high part? What's the most singing part? Christina's going to take that part, end quote. And I think we know what part they're talking about. And so Pink, you know, being the woman that we all know and love, she kind of stood up and was like, hi, how are you? So nice of you to introduce yourself. I'm Pink. She will not be taking that part. And that's kind of where, according to Pink, the tensions began. Pink even admitted, from there, I just became an asshole.
It's unfair because it wasn't Christina who came in there like a dick. You know, celebrities have to surround themselves with people who will do their bidding for them so they don't seem like an asshole.
True. I would also be surprised if Christina truly did nothing, you know, like right. didn't have some attitude
the here or there. Of the doubt.
Yes. But after years of kind of this tension, they both have confirmed that the hatchet has been buried. So all's well that ends well.
All's well that ends well is right, but drama. So after all of this, you know, Pink, she's coming off this amazing success with this collaboration, this amazing first album. But as we mentioned, she had this R&B sound, and that just wasn't what she wanted for her second album. She wanted to take her sound in a new direction, away from R&B and more into this rock pop world. And she wanted more creative control to star on her next album, Misunderstood. And I want to be clear that the album is spelled M exclamation point S-S-U-N-D-A-Z-T-O-O-D. Got it?
No.
Me neither. Writing that out a million times was a nightmare. The album was named Misunderstood because of Pink's belief that people had a wrong image of her. And that's probably right, because she was singing a genre that she didn't really want to sing. Mm-hmm. So this album was released in November 2001. And if my math is correct, Pink was only 23 when this album came out, which is like crazy to think about. As we said, Pink wanted to move in more of a rock direction, and she was really drawing inspiration from her favorite acts growing up, like Annie Lennox and Method Man. She also wanted to work with a new crop of producers, including Dallas Austin and Scott Storch. But her most notable collab for the album may be Linda Perry. You guys know her. She wrote Beautiful. I am beautiful, no matter what they say. And Hurt for Christina. Which, by the way, I saw a Howard Stern interview with Pink where she said that she wanted Beautiful for herself. Linda gave it to Christina instead. Maybe that was sort of mentioned, you know, like she already was like, you got my song.
T.
Look at us with all of our sources. Yours is unnamed and mine is Howard Stern. You heard it here. Probably last. Well, Linda was a member of Four Non Blondes, which was one of Pink's favorite groups growing up. She said that Linda was like her idol. So apparently, Pink found Linda's phone number in her makeup artist's phone book, like her own little black book. And Pink left a 10-minute message on Linda's answering machine. Pink has since divulged the contents of that faithful message, that it was about, quote, how much I loved Linda and how much she owes me because I got arrested singing her music out of my window at 3:30 in the morning and how I'm going to stalk her if she doesn't return my call, end quote. Sounds very Pink from what we know about her. And also remember phone books, like the little personal ones where you'd like write down everyone's phone numbers.
Still write down everybody's phone numbers and addresses because I freaking love those things so much. I love these kind of stories, though. I read further that just a few minutes after leaving this infamous 10-minute long voicemail, Linda called Pink back and invited her to her house in LA. But when Pink suggested maybe they start writing a song together, Linda was initially reluctant. And she said in an interview, quote, I told Pink I'm not hip at all. I make lo-fi garage-sounding classic rock records, end quote. And apparently, Pink responded with the likes of, I know, that's what I want. So that's when Misunderstood's recording sessions began in Linda's home studio. And in this process, apparently Linda was playing the piano and asking Pink to express her feelings in a melody, which sounds really hard and terrifying. And Pink said she felt petrified and confused kind of by this at first because she was accustomed to a totally different creative process. Legend has it, though, as Linda began to play chords over a rough instrumental, Pink picked up the microphone and started to ad lib. And in about 5 minutes, they wrote and recorded Eventually off Misunderstood. Its lyrics were entirely improvised on the spot, and Pink's vocals were recorded in one take.
Oh,
I know, like no big deal. After that, Pink moved into Linda's home for several months, and those sessions yielded about 20 tracks, like just cranking that shit out. So get this. Pink had begun working with Linda on this album without the knowledge of her label. So surprise, after a few sessions, she played four songs for L.A. Reid. He rejected most of the songs she played and was very concerned about Pink departing from this R&B sound. He thought she would be alienating an audience who was expecting another album like Can't Take Me Home. Her desire for creative control was met with resistance. Big surprise there, especially since she was a new artist. But L.A. could not persuade Pink to record more R&B songs. Pink recalled in an interview, quote, L.A. and I fought. He was like, you can't abandon your fans. And I was like, I want to take them with me. And he said, fine, I'm going to give you the opportunity to fail, end quote.
Ooh.
Yikes, right? And then at the end, he really ate those words, though, because he called the completed album Misunderstood a masterpiece. He said, the thing about Misunderstood is that lyrically, it's a brilliant record. She wrote most, if not all, of the lyrics on the record. 12 of the 14 tracks, to be exact.
And that's a woman in STEM right there.
Yes. And he said that he does believe that she proved a point with this, that you can be a pop star and have a brain and have some creativity and have some depth and have some feelings and not be afraid to bear those feelings. I mean, I think she has more than some creativity and some depth, but that is definitely what she was able to do with Misunderstood.
And some feelings. And
all of the above and more. Whatever they were doing worked. A critical success, observers regarded Misunderstood as a significant progression from Can't Take Me Home and an artistic breakthrough for Pink. Most music critics praised the album's emotional depth, blending of styles, while others appreciated her vocal performance and songwriting. I loved this quote. A critic from the Baltimore Sun wrote, quote, "On Misunderstood, Pink gunned her engines in a totally different direction, recording rock and blues-tinged pop. It's as if Beyoncé Knowles ripped off a mask and announced, 'Guess what? I'm actually Gwen Stefani.'"
Uh-huh.
Quote.
So four singles supported Misunderstood, three of which peaked in the top 10 of the Billboard Hot 100. As Mary mentioned, this was a huge commercial success. It was certified 5 times platinum, and it's Pink's best-selling album. And at the 45th Grammy Awards, the album was nominated for Best Pop Vocal Album, but sadly lost to Nora Jones' Come Away With Me, which I remember watching this Grammys, like, distinctly being like, who is Nora Jones?
Yeah, I was not a Nora Jones gal.
It was too slow. It was too romantic. I was like, ew, I wanted to hear Pink sing about getting the party started. So
I was going to say, did you want to get the party started? Because that is the first single off this album and the first one we need to talk about. This song peaked at number 4 in the United States, and it was certified gold. You know, it received generally positive reviews. It was an international success. It was the top 10 in many countries and number 1 in Australia, Ireland, New Zealand, just to name a few. And how this song came about, a week before meeting Pink, like after Pink left that unhinged 10-minute voicemail that we were talking about earlier, Linda had started working on this song, and she was totally unfamiliar with the new musical technology of Y2K. And so Linda decided to learn a little bit more about it. And she purchased a bunch of new, like, recording equipment. I don't even know how to pronounce these things, but they're like expansion cards, synthesizers, Tascam recorders, like, you name it. She got all the new hip tech. And Linda had no goal in mind. And she was just like, I just wanted to kind of mess around with it, figure out what this all does. And she started programming her beats with these new tools. And Linda said she finished the song by including every catchphrase you could possibly imagine before laughing at the realization that she had written her first dance song, Get the Party Started. Linda knows her music. She may not have known the tech at the time, but she knows her music. And she had a feeling that the song had commercial appeal. And so she originally offered Get the Party Started to Madonna, who turned it down.
Do you think she regrets that?
Probably not. It's probably just like a blip on the radar of the career, I would guess. So that's how it got brought to Pink's attention after Madonna said no. And Pink was like, all right, I'm in. And she agreed to record it. And it was her lead single off the album and became her best-selling song at the time. About.com placed the song at number 1 in their list of the top 100 best party songs of all time in 2019. So just recently. That's crazy. I don't know if I agree with that.
I can't wait to hear your take on this song.
The song was nominated for a Grammy Award for Best Female Pop Vocal Performance, which, shocking, lost to Nora Jones's Don't Know Why.
I don't know why I didn't come.
Another one I couldn't really get myself into. But it did win the award for favorite song at the Kids' Choice Awards and the MTV Europe Music Awards. The music video was shot and directed by David Myers, and Linda makes a cameo as a bartender.
Oh, that's fun.
David Myers directed this music video, as he's directed many of our favorites. And this is just a quintessential Pink music video, in my opinion. She goes from car to skateboard to the club. And once she's in the club, we actually see a one Kevin Federline side eye.
Bombastic side eye.
And he's one of the dancers that she's breaking it down with. And this was before he was K-Fed and just a mere Kevin Federline. And the video was nominated for Best Pop Video, and it won Best Female, Best Dance Video. So this song just had a lot going on around it. But let me tell you, I fucking hate this song. And as you so aptly described I think another Pink song, Kelsey. I just feel like this should be like a food fight song in a Nickelodeon movie. But one thing I do like is Linda Perry's production, that like wah 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 wah.
Yes.
Very classic Y2K sounding to me, which I do like.
I get that you don't like it, but like when this song came on at the sixth grade dance, like I wasn't not gonna dance and like put my arms in the air, like I just don't care. My favorite line is when she says, "I'll be burning rubber, you'll be kissing my ass," and then there's like this little laugh that she does. "I'll be burning rubber, you'll be kissing my ass." It's so funny. I mean, this song is one of those ones that when it plays, I remember the smell of my first hair straightener.
Oh my God. It's so a core nostalgic memory.
It really is a core memory.
I love that. And I really love the next single off the album. And
I'm glad you liked one of them.
Yes. I like 2.5 of them. The next one is Don't Let Me Get Me. "Cause I'm a hazard to my..." This was co-written by Pink and Dallas Austin. Commercially, it was certified gold. It became Pink's fifth single to enter the top 10 of the Billboard charts. It peaked all the way up at number 8. It was her first number 1 on the Billboard mainstream top 40 charts, which is like the pop charts. The music video for Don't Let Me Get Me was again shot by director David Myers. This is another memorable music video from her. She's like this classic high school student, but not classic at all. It's like more nonconformity, and her not fitting in with the crowd causes, you know, conflict with teachers and other students. And two key lines I want to point out in this song is first, when she kind of calls out L.A. Reid. Listen here. "L.A. told me pop star, all
you have to change is everything you are." I never picked up that it was L.A. Reid the person. I thought that it was just like Los Angeles meaning,
right,
like a metaphor for the music industry.
That's what I thought as a kid as well. Because we didn't know who L.A. Reid was as a kid, but the video kind of proves that she's meeting with this man that resembles L.A. Reid, and they're having this conversation. You know, you can be a pop star. All you have to change is everything you are, which kind of sounds like something he would say based on their dynamics and discussions about her image. Knowing the background to that line, I appreciate that kind of FU call out a little bit.
I bet he loved it.
I'm sure he was thrilled. I have another line I want to discuss.
The Britney reference.
Yes.
So as you mentioned, Pink worked with Dallas Austin on this song, and they wrote this lyric involving Britney Spears. "Tired of being compared to damn Britney Spears. She's so pretty, that just ain't me." Apparently, Dallas said in an interview that she was so nervous about calling Britney out. Pink did not want to mention Britney by name and start beef or anything like that, but it was really Dallas insisting that she needed some edge. He said, quote, "You need to nudge a little bit to make your niche." So interesting. I think he was trying to tell her, like, you need to be a little pointy elbows to show why you're different and you're not just another pop star. Britney was just an example. But ever since then, Pink has changed the lyric in her live performances, which I think is the right move. Obviously, I'm dying to hear your thoughts on this lyric.
I watched some interviews that Pink did from back in the day when she was asked about it. And most of the time, her response was like, and I kind of understand, this is a compliment. Like, I'm tired of being compared to like the prettiest pop star in our time right now. That's really hard for me. Like, I understand that. It's not like she's roasting Britney's talent, her looks, anything like that. It's more like she's trying to find herself and be herself. And you can't do that when you're just constantly being stacked up against someone that is so different than you. But as you said, her changing the lyrics, it's been very touching to me to see footage of her in recent shows, changing it from "damn Britney Spears" to "sweet Britney Spears." "Sweet Britney." I just think it was an added showing of support and love for Britney in a time when she really needed it the most. Like literally the first time I saw a clip of that, I teared up. It just was a very subtle little thing that she did. No one was expecting that. And again, it's just a way to support Britney. This is one of my favorite Pink songs, period. I think we have all felt this way about something, someone, some experience, super relatable, vulnerable. You know, it's like exposing our deepest insecurities, and we've all been there one time or another.
Oh, absolutely. This is one of those scream, sing in the car songs for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that way about the next single also, which is Just Like a Pill. This was the third single off the album. It was co-written by Pink and Dallas Austin again. This was Dallas's first song that he wrote with Pink. And apparently, L.A. Reid didn't like it. So Mary, you mentioned this earlier, that when Pink played some of those songs for L.A. Reid, he was like, now I want you to go in more of an R&B direction. And Dallas was like, no, this is the vibe. Just Like a Pill is the vibe. So you can go find somebody else to work with Pink if that's what you want for your artist. But this is my vibe. This is what I'm going to do with Pink. And Pink was like, no, I will not work with anybody else. I want to work with Dallas. They played the song for more people at the label, and everybody agreed that LA was wrong. I love that. Power in numbers. They were like, you are not statistically relevant. We're gonna go and pull more people.
How do you say no to this song? Like, I'm just so curious what he didn't like about it, because it's such a good pop alt rock song. It's like, I mean, again, who hasn't been unable to let go, addicted to a person that is not good for you? Like, this song and Pink's vocals literally scream vulnerability and authenticity. Also, there's like a pitch change with her riffs in the final chorus that I will never recover from. Let's talk about that pre-chorus bridge. Remember being young and not like understanding fully what she was talking about. I was like, the morphine is making her itch? Like, why? I don't get it. I can't stay on your morphine 'cause it's making me itch. And then like all of a sudden I hear that the nurse is being a bitch. Like, why is there a nurse there? I'm so confused, but I loved it anyways.
I know this is the only explicit song on that album because of that line.
Bitch.
She's being a little bitch. Oh, yes. And as you pointed out, this song talks about leaving a toxic relationship and likening it to drug abuse, which normally I'm like, that's annoying. Don't use drug abuse as a metaphor. But Pink has been really vocal and open about her own struggles with addiction, including a near fatal drug overdose when she was just 16 years old. I guess she was at a rave on Thanksgiving Day. Awful. And, you know, as anyone who has listened to this album can glean, and as you mentioned before, Mary, Pink grew up in a family where her parents hated each other. They were always fighting, throwing things at each other. And when she was a teen, just like the vocal coach suggested, she was a punk, to use her own words. She was selling drugs. She was kicked out of the house. She dropped out of high school. And to use her own words, she went off the rails. And it was actually her professional drive that led her to sobering up. A DJ offered to let her sing at a set, but he said she could only perform if she's sober. And she was like, all right, that's what I needed. I think that's really inspiring. So anyways, let's move on to the final single from the album. And I'm sorry to say that it's a real Debbie Downer, as if talking to drug addiction wasn't a downer enough. It's Family Portrait. This one was co-written by Pink and Scott Storch, and it's about her parents' tumultuous relationship and their divorce, growing up in a very dysfunctional family And this song is told through the eyes of her as a child. But despite its sad topic, the people and the critics loved it. It peaked within the top 20 in both the UK, the US. It was certified gold. And Pink has said of this song, quote, "It makes me sad, but it also helped release some of my feelings. Pain is not always a bad thing. It can be a learning thing." And as a child of divorce myself, not to get too deep here, but I can attest that, you know, when she sings about not wanting two Christmases or two addresses, it cuts me deep. I can't lie. Listening back to this song all these years later, I'm like, wow. When she sings about, you know, promising to be a better kid so her parents will stay together, like, oh!
This was one I, like, consciously skipped. You know, I was one of the not 50% of the people whose parents got divorced.
I wasn't either when this came out, so I skipped it also.
Okay, yeah. I just, I can't relate to it, and it's too dark for me to spend time on as a kid. Like, you know, but Pink revealed that the song started as a poem back when she was 9 years old that she wrote as a means to process the divorce. And she recalled in an interview when she was recording Misunderstood that she went into the studio and didn't know what she was going to sing. And 20 minutes later, she was crying and like almost like blacked out, like didn't really remember what she did. And the song was the result of that. And rewatching the music video, that little girl is just so young looking and precious. It's just heartbreaking.
Did you know her name is Kelsey?
No.
Fun fact about a not fun music video.
I also read when talking about the music video that Pink said that the video was the way it was with the little girl singing instead of her singing because it was just too much for Pink to do. And she's like, that little girl was me. That's how I was when I was 7 years old. Except I wasn't that cute, which I love the self-deprecating humor, but there's like a pre-chorus line that's really a gut punch. It ain't easy growing up in World War III. Never know what love could be, you'll see. I don't want love to destroy me like it has done my family. It's just heartbreaking knowing people grow up in an environment like that.
Oh my God, I know. And she's been so vocal about how awful her home life was as a kid. And it's so hard to not feel for her. It's really amazing what she's been able to do and how so much of her music now is about positivity and self-empowerment and picking yourself up by the bootstraps. It's really amazing what she's done coming out of that environment. Whew. Okay, let's lighten things up kind of with some honorable mentions that weren't singles. I want to start with 18 Wheeler. Push me out the window. I feel like this is like the pop rock version of the Chumbawamba I Get Knocked Down song. I get knocked down, but I get up again. You're never gonna beat me down. However, like most things from the early 2000s, there are some things that I just don't think would fly if this song was released today. When you listen to this song with fresh ears, you'll hear a lyric in there that I genuinely wonder how it made it to the final cut at all. Here's a clip. You can hang me like a slave out underground. I had to look into this because I was like, there's just no way that everybody was okay with that. And I saw an interview on Vlad TV on YouTube with the producer Dallas Austin, who co-wrote this song with Pink. And he said that Pink really did not want to sing that lyric. She was really hesitant, but he nudged her on it. Very similar to the Britney Spears call out and Don't Let Me Get Me. You know, Pink just didn't want to include it. And he was like, no, you need some edge. And he went on to say in that interview that a lot of these songs co-written by him were inspired by his breakup with Chili. I just don't know that it's the best look for a white artist to compare literally anything to slavery or the Underground Railroad, but I just wanted to share what I was able to find about it. I really haven't found much else on it.
I'm surprised she hasn't like gone back and taken it out or something, you know?
Or done like a Taylor's version.
Yeah. Okay. My honorable mention, and not because I think it's my favorite song, but I want to talk about Misery, which is her collaboration with Aerosmith's Steven Tyler. I feel like a collaboration like this deserves a shout out. Steven Tyler was one of Pink's musical inspirations She's always referenced him, and they met early in her career at a radio show in New York City. And apparently they bonded very quickly and made plans to record a song together. Misery was written by Richie Supa, and Steven basically pitched it to Pink, who loved it and recorded it with him. She described the collaboration as an experience of a lifetime. And I will say that's a cool little feather to get in your cap for your second album. This song is super unique. I would describe it as kind of like a blues gospel vibe. So again, not something I necessarily seek out, but just another feather in her cap. It continues to impress me with her range and musical taste.
I get that it shows off her range, but this was a skipper for me.
Yeah, it's not like a bop by any means.
It reminds me of like an old Wild West movie. I don't know why. Like a song that you'd hear in a saloon.
I get that.
I also love Lonely Girl because we get a Linda Perry feature, like she's singing on it. There's like this fun call and response effect duet. This song is really tackling Pink's feelings of her increasing fame and trying to find herself as an artist while struggling with these feelings of not knowing who she really is. And obviously, we have to shout out Respect because, hello, R-E-S-P-E-C-T for a new generation. I also love how it's sort of calling out cheesy guys and their pickup lines. There's this one line about asking, what's your sign? Pickup lines like, what's your sign, won't get you any place. Remember when that was like such a thing? But did anyone ever actually ask that question? Because I feel like astrology is only now becoming like such a huge thing in the zeitgeist.
I don't know.
There's a question. If you were around, please tell us. Did anyone ever actually ask you your sign in a club?
Well, Pink was hitting the club with all of her hits. And just like all of our favorite artists, she needed to support Misunderstood. And she headlined a tour, and it was called The Party Tour. Pretty fitting with the lead single and overall kind of vibe that she was definitely giving off at this time. She seemed like this hardcore party chick, but like would also get on a motorcycle. That was kind of like the vibe I got from her at this time. And it was a lot of fun. But planning the tour, Pink was giving complete control of all aspects of this event, including the staging and the opening acts. Now, this was so funny to me because the stage was very, very simple. There was like a backdrop resembling a brick wall with a graffiti text that just read Pink. And there was a video screen. There were some lights. There was one microphone. And the show setup was like designed for nightclubs and concert halls because Pink was at the time playing for an average audience of about 3,000 attendees. At the same time, you know, her peers like Britney and Christina were touring the world in amphitheaters and arenas. And Pink gave a quote during this time. She said, "Big productions to me are great. Like, I love going to Vegas and seeing shows, but I think that sometimes it's distracting, especially when you are there to listen to the music. I remember being on tour with NSYNC, and I don't know if this is appropriate, but it was something like a $5 million stage. And to me, that's like, man, I will take a box out there and stand on it with a microphone. I ain't spending that much money. I love the shows that are in dingy little dark clubs, smoky, no production whatsoever. My stage show is raw and unpredictable. It's not a lot of choreography this time. It's just instruments, a voice, incredible music. So this is going to be definitely more organic." So obviously, this was 20 years ago, and we all grow up and evolve and change and, you know, have different tastes. But I am just like dying. I'm not roasting Pink. I just think it's so funny because she was so anti this back in the day. And I wonder if it was because she wasn't in the amphitheaters, or maybe she didn't have the budget for these like circus of a shows. Who knows? But like, she's literally doing flips through freaking Fenway Park. Her show is now known for spectacle.
This woman does not perform unless she's in a harness and like painting above the audience.
And we love it. I'm not meaning this in a negative way whatsoever. It's just so funny to see how much her taste has changed.
I think you might be right. It is a little bit of also growing up from, you know, she started performing in clubs at 14. And yeah. I think there's sort of this like, you're a sellout culture when you start getting really big. So I feel like she was probably trying to not seem cocky or like she changed or like the fame is changing her. I feel like that probably had something to do with it. But now I'm with you. I feel like that was just limiting her. Now she can just have fun and do what she wants. And she was a hardcore gymnast her entire life. Oh. So that's where a lot of that acrobatics comes in. I learned that in my deep dive research.
I had no idea. She makes it look so simple. So that makes sense. But like, okay, one thing I love about Pink is she literally seems fearless in the sense like she calls and leaves Linda Perry a 10-minute voicemail, gets her on her record. But during this rehearsals for this party tour, Pink decided to reach out to Lenny Kravitz and said she was rehearsing to be the opening act for his tour. She just said it as a joke. She was like, why don't you come check me out? Check out the show. See what we're up to. She even sent him a pair of black and pink panties with the Pink/Lenny tour written on them. Talk about manifesting. So apparently whatever she did worked. And once she finished the North American dates for her party tour, she went on to tour as the opening act for Lenny on the Lenny Live tour. And again, like, take that chance, people. Send the message. Do it. You never know. It could work out. The worst they can say is no, right? So this album, this era, in our opinion, is basically when Pink popped. And it was the catalyst in making Pink the pop alt rock queen that she is. Spin credited the album's success with the coming of age of former teen pop fans and their growing interest in different types of music, which I feel is so true. Like, this expanded my genres, my tastes. The Guardian attributed Pink's popularity to the lucrative and untapped market of teenage girls who may have liked Britney 3 years ago, but now have the taste for low-key rebellion, the Osbournes, and boys with tattoos.
Oof.
Great quote. And Stereo Gum said that Pink's opposition to her label's pressure to remain an R&B singer somehow wrestled autonomy of her image and sound in an industry practically fueled by harnessing complete control of their young, primarily female stars.
Ooh.
But yeah, so Kelsey, how many sparkly pink microphones would you give Ms. Understood?
Oh, okay, out of 5, I feel like I would give it 3.75.
Okay, I was going to say 3.5. So that's
3.75, because there's some skippers on there that I just don't love, but the songs that I love, I really love.
And we come back to them to this day. It's like timeless.
Listening to her album all the way through, I was like, wow, I know every word to every song except the Stephen Tyler.
Misery. Except Misery.
Oh, that's so funny. So there you go. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you agree with our rating of Misunderstood, let us know in our DMs on Instagram at When They Popped Pod. You can always leave a review for us and we'll read it on the pod. Also, PSA, as your local podcast weather person, tut tut, looks like Backstreet Boys content coming in hot. It is a Backstreet Boys heavy month approaching. Just envision me in front of like a green screen pointing to the different temperatures. Temperatures will be rising around the 18th when we touch down in Cancun. Once again, we are desperate for outfit recommendations. So any good resort wear you guys are seeing out there, let us know. But we will be reporting live from the ground. So stay tuned to our Instagram, our TikTok, and you'll see some really fun content there.
And we'll be releasing live episodes from Cancun, giving you all the details of what's happening. We're bringing our microphones abroad, baby.
Probably like out of breath and more delulu.
Not feeling well.
I know AJ keeps going on all these interviews being like, sleep now because you will not sleep at all. And I'm like, oh, I booked us massages.
We're going to be R&Ring. So
I thought this was a vacation. I was going to say something, but I forgot what it was.
Okay. That's okay. We love you. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.